I had a maths teacher at work.
Sorry? Yeah, that's for sure.
I think it was a science teacher, actually. He used to, when the room was dark and he walked in, he'd make us all put our hands up. Everyone put your hands in, and then he'd turn the lights on. He'd go, see, many hands make light work.
Anyway, it's not bad. I like it.
Similar to yours.
That's quite good. So, we're back with Elaine. Hi, Elaine. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
That's good. So, just a thing, this episode, episode 2 of season 7, is brought to you by the Merriweather Surf Club Cap and Bottle Special, which, two for $20. You've got to buy both. So, you can't just buy the cap or the bottle. So two for $20, bit of a recession buster, ideal Christmas gift.
Yep, so if it's probably relatively limited edition, I assume.
Yeah, limited to when we run out.
Only a few hundred remaining.
No, there's probably only about 40 caps left and about the same number of bottles.
Okay, we got them.
They were actually done by Christy from Phoenix Embroidery, who's a Beach Business Breakfast attendee. She does promotional stuff and walked into one of our beach breakfasts, and I said, hi, how are you, what do you do? And she said, I do promotional products. And I said, good, we've got a job for you. So she did 300 hats and 300 bought bottles for Telstra, who we had here the week before last. So that was very good. So we've had a few left over, so we're just selling them to make a bit of extra money for the club. But anyway, episode 2 of season 7. And Elaine from Unravelling Red Tape. So Elaine's a member of our Beach Business Breakfast, which you can come to third Thursday of every month here at Merriweather Surf Club. Check out the website, beachbusinessbreakfast.com.au, which Jez made, and our Facebook page, which is great. So how's that going?
Good. Checking that nothing's crashing.
Excellent. So, Elaine, are you from Newcastle?
I grew up in Newcastle, yes.
Okay, cool. Whereabouts do you grow up?
Merriweather.
Nice. Yeah.
Merriweather Primary, Merriweather High School.
Cool.
Just Merriweather.
Yeah, that's cool. And so you spent all your time here, or you spent time away from Newcastle as well?
After school, I went to uni in Brisbane. I got a job in Brisbane.
What did you do up there?
Oh,
yep.
I did law, I did science, and I did arts in modern European languages.
Oh, nice. Excellent. That's cool. And what uni was that?
I did it at the University of Queensland and Griffith University.
Nice. Okay. Excellent. Then started work in Brisbane?
Started work in Brisbane.
Yeah, where was that?
Tax office.
Excellent.
Yeah, your favourite place.
I've worked there, and Elaine and I don't think we crossed paths that much,
but I don't think we did at all, actually.
There's a couple of Beach Business Breakfast members used to work at the tax office, and Norm, our international chef, used to work there as well. So you worked in Brisbane. How long were you in Brisbane for?
I don't know. I went from Brisbane to Canberra.
Yep.
Did some more study in Canberra.
Mm-hmm.
Went back to Brisbane. Went to France and did a master's in European business tax law.
Nice.
And worked at some French law firms.
Excellent. Whereabouts in France?
European language skills, that's cool.
In northern France, on the border of Belgium.
Cool.
And then I went to the European Commission in Brussels and worked there for 6 months.
Excellent.
Then I went back to Canberra because I decided the quality of the work in Canberra, in terms of what I do, which is policy, designing the law, the work in Canberra, you can't beat it.
Was that back in tax?
That was tax and treasury.
Treasury, nice. Yep.
Because things move faster or it's more interesting?
The best quality of policy works there, I guess. What happens in a lot of, and it's the same in state government, a lot of the best work's kept in Sydney. And because that's where it's happening, and that's where you can go to meetings easily, that's where everybody is. Like, we were in the same office, Treasury, Tax, and the Office of Parliamentary Council, who's the people who actually write the law. It's quite technical.
And you've got Prime Minister and Cabinet there, and all the ministers and the minister staff. And
you just walk into the meetings, as opposed to when you're Brisbane, then you might have to fly there or whatever. That's just the way it works. We didn't have Skype at that point.
Right.
We had phones.
Okay. So when you finished there, when did you finish your public service career? When was that?
So after that, actually, I went to Luxembourg and worked for KPMG. And then I went back to Sydney. And in Sydney, I left the public service.
Mm-hmm.
Then I worked for the property council doing policy and advocacy for them.
Mm-hmm.
With it was called international capital markets, so all the money movements around the world, all the really complex stuff, doing that. And then I really missed Canberra.
Yeah.
I know that's something you're not supposed to say, but I really missed Canberra.
It's a happening place. full of public servants.
What you're saying is you missed it because
of the top work.
That's where impact happens. So if you're engaged in political work somewhere that's not Canberra or Sydney,
it's where you need to be.
The capital, then you have less impact and you're further from decisions. Is that?
And you get. I guess you get kind of the less interesting work because everyone in Canberra takes the most interesting work.
Yeah, right.
And the best quality work is all going to be done in Canberra because everyone's there running in it. I guess that kind of.
So it's really just like being in high school, who gets picked first for the soccer team.
Absolutely. So if you're in Canberra, you get picked first for the soccer team. I love that analogy.
It's about being there, isn't it? So when did you start unravelling red tape? When did that? What was the?
So I started that. About a year and a half ago,
okay.
I was in Canberra, and then I came back to Newcastle, worked for the uni for a little while, and I guess I was at a decision point of do I want to go back working for large corporates or mm-hmm. large industry associations, and I was watching the Banking Royal Commission, and mm-hmm. it made me really angry to watch the difference between the way the big guys dealt with it and the smaller guys, and I thought, well, hang on a minute. The big guys, they can afford a policy and advocacy person or government relations person full time. So they seemed quite.
So you're talking like banks like CBA and AMP and all like multi-billion-dollar organisations that can afford teams of
experts
and advocates and accountants and whatever. Yeah.
And then when you watch the other guys who weren't that big and didn't have a policy, advocacy, government relations person, they were really struggling. And when I was in government designing the law, we had the same issue. It's a struggle to engage with the smaller end of town. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Here's an opportunity to help bridge that gap, to be a translator if you want, because the problem for smaller business is that government speaks this language with all these words that make no sense to anyone unless you live in Canberra.
or you watch Utopia.
Or you watch Utopia.
Yeah.
Or what's the Total Control was fabulous as well.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't make sense. And so I thought, well, I want to set up and I want to help these people because everybody deserves good access to government and good access to decision making and good law. But at the moment, it's not the way it's working.
Yeah. So who are some of the people you're working with now? Like, what sort of clients are you helping?
If you can, you probably can't name them,
but you know, just sort of the type of work.
So I do help some individuals, but that's not the main work I do. I mainly help as small businesses and smaller industry associations. So the big industry associations, they have corporate members and they have quite a lot of money. The smaller industry associations have individuals. So you might have, I don't know, all your physios, they have... Yep. But they're all individual people generally. They might have one or two people. So those associations don't have the sort of money that the property council does when I work for them.
A professional association, but it is probably largely volunteer or sort of maybe some paid staff, but they're not like a housing industry association or something that's a corporate that represents.
So they've got a small number of staff.
Sure.
Some of them have no staff, they just have a virtual assistant.
So do you sort of follow what's happening and then go, okay, this is coming to this industry and go approach that industry, or do they come to you? How do you get your customers?
So I've tried following what's happening and approaching people, but I find that doesn't work as well as sort of putting my name out there and talking to people and having those people come to me.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I'm just not a natural salesperson. I don't know.
Yeah.
But when I sit down and have a conversation with, say, a physiotherapist, say, what are the issues in your industry? They'll give me a list and I'll say, oh, well, these are things that I could help with if you think that's something that you and your peak industry want. And I find that seems to work really well for me.
Yeah.
I have tried approaching some other associations, but it just hasn't worked that well.
Yeah, and you do some good social media as well. Like, you put some good posts on there about, you know, issue, without sort of naming industries, but what sort of, you know, issues are around and how you can help people, which is good.
So I did a four-part series on Royal Commissions, because that's how I started. Mm-hmm. And I felt quite passionately that I wanted everyone to understand how it works.
Yeah.
And that explains to people what to expect from Royal Commissions and what the various steps are.
Yeah, do you ever think we'll have a Royal Commission into Royal Commissions? Because that's the thing that's probably the thing that's missing. Like,
it's the go-to. As soon as there's like a giant political gridlock, it's like, okay, Royal Commission.
Yeah, when in doubt, let's have a Royal Commission.
Feud break.
Look, most of them do come up with a lot of fantastic recommendations, but you do find that sometimes, like, say the one with aged care, a lot of the things coming out of that has been known and around for a long time, so...
Well, it's the same thing with the banking. It didn't say anything different from every other... We'd had report after report after report. And if you look into the last big Royal Commission, which was Aboriginal deaths in custody, most of those recommendations still haven't been implemented. So maybe you're right. Maybe it's just something to do.
In the performance of it as well. It's not just someone producing a document that makes it public and media. I mean, like, I didn't watch literally the Finance Royal Commission. However, there was enough interesting personalities and things being said that would make, like, news effectively. Mm. Whereas someone or a team of people sitting in an office producing a report for 6 months doesn't make news except for the one day when it's released.
Yeah, well, sure,
which, if it's not popular with politicians, happens to be on V8 Supercar Day or Christmas Eve or something. Yeah. Like, it's buried so far down the pipe that nobody hears about it, and so it's easy to move on from it.
Well, certainly the Banking Royal Commission didn't turn up anything different from what we've seen in all those reports, but that Royal Commission has given us results that we've never had before. Yeah. When you ring a bank today with a complaint, you get far more traction far easily than you did 2 years ago.
And the very nature that it happened fired everybody up.
It's a bit like a Bunsen burner. It's sort of, like, it really does. It really focuses attention for it.
Yeah. Can you give us something surprising? So I guess many people, myself included, are fairly abstract from government. Maybe we're affected by it. We vote every so often. But what's something surprising about how policy is created that would be unexpected to your average person in business or just the world?
Well, what surprises most of my clients is that government wants to engage with the smaller businesses. They want to be fair. Government wants law that benefits everyone. Government is very aware that the way that policy and government decision making and law works right now really benefits the big end of town. But they struggle. They struggle to engage. So they really want to. So if you can go to government and be reasonable and speak their language, that you can get really great results without too much effort.
Mm. Can you give us an example? Like, is there something that we're all affected by now that was sort of, maybe not your work, but something that someone would have proposed from business community that's presented itself now as something that we all take for granted, maybe, or just as, like, I don't know, putting you on the spot here. The thing I wonder about is, like, for example, you know, when we get policy, maybe often through the state government, I suppose, where it's like a grant for X. Now, obviously, there's a whole lot of decisions that happen before that, but are those kind of things often driven from business, or someone in Canberra or Sydney just decides, oh, we need to do something about energy efficiency? I know, we'll do light bulbs or air conditioners or that, or is that sort of thing often from the business end?
It will depend, but ideas can come from everywhere. So if you can go and speak effectively to a government department, and I would recommend always starting with a government department, not with a minister's office or your local MP, and say, look, this is an issue, this is what's coming up, energy efficiency, we feel that this would be a great thing to start developing, and basically it costs you nothing because blah, 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 you give a whole heap of data. Often that does come from that sort of thing. It also can come from a bureaucrat thinking about it or somebody else, but as stuff comes out of, like, social media these days as well, like the tampon tax in 1999 when the GST was coming in, there was a massive campaign, but it was nowhere near as effective as the recent social media.
Yeah.
So
do government want individuals to communicate this, because I obviously, if you're you've got a political activism or a cause, you're very like, okay, let's email all these politicians and send them letters. And does the Minister for Finance or the Minister for Small Business or something want to get a letter from a business saying, this is the problem we have, can you do anything about it? Or is it just sort of go like, oh, thank you for your letter, we're really pleased that you wrote to us, and see you later? Like, do they want that kind of interaction?
Well, politicians want to feel loved, basically, so they like getting letters.
It's driven a bit by the political cycle as well.
But
does it ever become an action, or is it just like
the placated? Best way to get it acted, because what any politician will do is they will send it back to the department. And so if you've spoken to the department before and you've got the department on side, the department already has the response. If you and 100 other people are all writing the same letter to the minister at the same time, you will get, generally, a pre-written letter that is full of
hyperbole.
Say, well, government has to take into all sorts of concessions, and we can't guarantee everything, and we have to take into account the budgetary
which doesn't say anything. So if they already have the answer because somebody has communicated to Department of Finance or Industry or whatever that happens to be, and they've said, okay, this is how we can deal with this problem that 1,000 people are upset about. Here, Minister, is your new option.
Here's how you solve the problem.
Yep.
And so they're like, bang, bang, we've got the people who want something done, we've got the answer, let's, the squirrels get into action and away it goes.
Yeah, and even another step where sometimes you've got a government which is struggling for whatever political reasons, and I've had ministers' departments ring me up, or ministers' offices, ring me up and say, hey, Elaine, we need to announce a good news policy the business backs. What have you got for us? And I'll say, give me an hour, I'll come back to you. Because then I'll quickly ring a couple of people and go, right, let's find the most important
thing. Do the solar train, which comes up at every episode of Utopia.
I was just thinking, this sounds just like a comedy skit. What should we do, Prime Minister?
Yes, Minister.
But they do. Government wants things that make... They want to do things... That's what gets them re-elected, is doing stuff that makes people happy. What they want.
It should be positive, make politicians look good, not cost too much money, not be a tax,
Nothing
that can go wrong. That's not going to get corrupted in some way.
Yeah, and start with the department. Always start with it. Because these are the people with the in-depth understanding, and they're the people who have the time. Ministers' offices don't have time. If they work a 100-hour week, they're thanking God for that week. That's the best week they've had. But the officials in the public service, they have the time to investigate. They will sit down with you. You can take the time to have a conversation with them. But again, be positive. If you start attacking them, they're going to close down the conversation and walk away, like anyone else will.
Retract from the activist attack stance.
Excellent.
Wow.
Well, that's been a fantastic discussion. Well, we can have Elaine back at one of our next seasons.
There's two. We'll deal with local government next time.
thanks for coming in. That's been very good. I think you're the most well-travelled small business person we've ever had. Been to all those countries and done all that stuff, which is fantastic. And so if you need help busting through a problem, give Elaine a call. You can find her on Facebook, Unravelling Red Tape, and your website. Unravelling Red Tape, or come along to the next Beach Business Breakfast, third Thursday, I think it's December 19, I think. A bit close to Christmas, but I won't. We might have a secret Santa. We'll see how it goes. But thanks for coming in, Elaine. It's been great. And Elaine's hopefully now going to go for a bike ride, but she'll have to see what the weather report's doing at 9:45.
Enjoy that glorious little tiny bit of rain we're getting.
Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Great to see you again.
Thanks, Elaine.
Thank you. Cheers.
See ya.
So we're still going on Facebook, cheers?
Yep. And check for me that Facebook's going okay.
Good.